This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Also remember, we're giving you the keyword that you need to claim a spot in the knockout tournament at Chase Center in 10 minutes. So just keep listening. Don't want to move too far away, though, from some of these Jimmy Butler reaction calls that have patiently been waiting. Eric in Mountain View, hey, you're next up. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
So couple of things. I think, you know, we had to make the trade, right? Mike Dunleavy's a new GM. He had to make, like, his impact in the league. People had to see what he was going to do. So regardless if it was Jimmy or anything else, he was going to have to do that trade. I actually am glad that with doing the trade, he didn't have to risk too many of the young guys that we had, because it was good that we're keeping Kuminga and Moody, who's on the up and up. And then second, this is going to fall really on Steve Kerr on how he's going to bring, you know, Jimmy into the fold and have him buy in into the culture that the Warriors have been playing. And everyone should be, hopefully, accept him as part of the team. But, you know, this is going to fall on Kerr and the team to accept Jimmy into the fold, you know?
No doubt. Look, this is always, Eric, thank you very much. It's always complex when you're talking about teams that have won and you've got high-level players and major egos in the room. You know, like I remember when the Lakers were doing the Kobe Shaq stuff, people used to say, well, God, Phil Jackson, my goodness, all you got to do is roll the ball out. Well, it's different. You have a point that a Phil Jackson or a Steve Kerr in the Kevin Durant era, for example, yeah, you've got all the better players. So you've got the better squad. This is a major advantage, and you're probably going to win the game. But don't act like every non-game minute isn't complicated, because it is. It's really hard to blend all that, and especially when you really don't know what's around the corner. Jimmy Butler came in yesterday, and he literally sounded like a choir boy, said all the right things. But we all damn well know that's not Jimmy. And you're signing up for 27 months of Jimmy Butler. And like, that's going to be a thing. Blend that in. Draymond, Steph, Steve, anybody else who may be coming through, and figure out everybody's assets and goals and hopes. And don't forget, Jonathan Kuminga, he would like to join that party. He would like to have a presence on the floor and have the offense run through him. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. Doesn't mean they can't do it. It's going to be a challenge.
And this is why you make the big money as a head coach. Steve Kerr, and you're right about the idea of being a head coach, no matter what level it is, no matter what you're doing. It's more than just when the ball goes up 82 times a year, that's when you're coaching. He's got to coach him on the plane, in practice, in the locker room, off the court, all the rest of it. It's all about creating a cohesive group. And when you have new players coming in, and I also think part of it too is when players that you've had go out. And I think that's one reason why I like the trade too, is Slo-Mo was traded. He was only here for 5 months. And Dennis Schroeder was traded. He was only here for 3 months. Lindy Waters got dealt. He was only here for about that long, maybe a little bit more if you count last year being up and down. And Andrew Wiggins was a hard one because he's a champion. He was a mainstay for about 5 seasons. But for Steve Kerr, I do think that's why he was a little solemn when he came out on the court in that first game after the trade, because it's hard. You're dealing with human beings.
Totally. No,
that, you have these relationships, and now he brings in Jimmy Butler, and it's up to Steve Kerr to do everything he can to meet Jimmy where he is.
Totally, and I have no issue with this, but I have to admit there's a little bit of a funny feel to it. When Steve Kerr has been around the NBA as long as he has, when Andrew Wiggins leaves and everybody's really sad, I get that. He called him the beautiful soul, right? Like, Andrew looks like he never hurt anybody and nobody ever wanted to hurt him. I know that's part of why Warrior fans get bummed with him sometimes, because it's like, dude, where's your dog in you? But Andrew is a, quote, beautiful soul. And then 24 hours later, Steve Kerr. Who has been on seemingly every franchise in every role.
He got traded 5 times.
For the last, I don't know, how many years are we talking about? 40 years?
Almost.
Around the NBA?
Yep.
And he walks to the podium and he's like, I've never met Jimmy Butler. I don't even know him.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm not saying it's preventative of anything. It just kind of caught me off guard when he said that.
A little bit, yeah.
I've never met Jimmy Butler. Like, you never just went over to him like, hey, like,
I'm Steve.
You're like, you know, the best player on the other team. Let's talk. Or in all the Olympic stuff, like, Jimmy Butler never rolled through there.
Yeah. Well, he's only been coaching in one cycle. He was an assistant for a second cycle, right. But I don't think that Jimmy Butler was ever like in that sphere.
In the tryout or any, like, not, you've
I
never
guess not.
Met Jimmy Butler. That
caught
know,
me a
man.
Little
it
bit
caught
off, guard.
Me off guard.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, when you're the head coach, you go over and you shake hands with the other coaches and maybe a player that you used to know or whatnot, and then you're gone. It's the players who mill about and, you know, bro it up. And you saw last night Steph and LeBron have a lengthy conversation with their hands over their mouth, which I love because all the amateur lip readers, you know. So they're both like, you know, arms around each other, and they're both...
Can you believe that we got Luka and you only got Jimmy? How about that?
Shut the hell up, LeBron. Okay? I'm not having it with you.
I didn't like LeBron making fun of Draymond when it was like the frustration was off of a clearly bad call. Like, you can make it like, look, trash talk, do it. Make fun, do it. Don't do it when you, you clearly stole a cookie.
You're talking about the 8-second call?
Yes. That's what led to all of that. Now they got Draymond to get teed up, so.
Score another one for LeBron.
Yeah, method to the madness. I get it.
And LeBron's gotten him so many times before. And, you know, LeBron was the one who goaded him into having Draymond punch him in the family jewels, which cost him a suspension, which cost him the series.
He goaded the league into making that a suspension. I don't think that was going to be a suspension until LeBron talked it out.
I think
post-game.
It was going to be a suspension because of all the other flagrant points he had accrued,
maybe.
Including the body slamming of Michael Beasley at the end of a game that there were 7 seconds left, and he picked up Beasley and threw him to the ground for no reason. So it wasn't just about the punch to LeBron's balls. That was the final blow, literally, after all the other flagrants he had accumulated.
No, probably.
It was an accumulation sensation, Mark.
Very good. That'll be $1.
Yep,
and
I'll pay it.
Yep. While Granny hits the button, we'll go to Matt in Napa. Hey, Matt, what's going on?
Hey there, fellas. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, absolutely. Heard an interesting take, or I was reading the news this morning. It's a reporter I'd never read before on SF Gate or something. It was the only real original take I'd kind of heard on this thing. He said something like, the Warriors fleeced the Heat. And so I want to lay you guys down a couple of questions and then take your answers off the air.
All right.
So is it possible that we're looking at this thing from a 5,000-foot view and Dr. Dunleavy is looking at it from a 30,000-foot view? Is it possible that Jimmy Butler isn't actually the piece that we've got and that he's going to be something we move to get something bigger this summer? Jimmy plus something. You know, forgive my naivety. I don't understand how the contracts work. But could you guys speak to what could this guy mean by the Warriors fleeced the Heat? Did they buy low? Are they planning on selling high?
I tell you what, Matt, the only way, and thank you very much, the only way I can answer that, because I haven't read the piece, I'll search for it and see. I would need to know the context of what he's saying in terms of how the Warriors fleeced the Heat to really understand where he's coming from. I don't see it that way. If his point is that the Warriors have acquired Jimmy Butler so that they can aggregate him with another contract or two for something even bigger coming this offseason, that'd be a hell of a trick. I don't know if that's possible. It's hard for me to believe that that's possible, knowing that Jimmy Butler's essentially been available all year long, and it got to a point where Miami really was almost out of options in terms of what to do with him. I don't think there's this massive thirst around the league for Jimmy Butler. He's a great player. He's a great player, but there just usually isn't that thirst for people who are in their mid to late 30s. Again, very, very healthy helping of I might be wrong. And if the Warriors pull that off, okay. But I don't know, man. Right now, it's hard to see that one.
That, to me, is a tough one to perceive when you think about moving that. And, you know, once you get through this league year, his new contract kicks in and he's making, what'd you say, 54 and then 58 after that. So you got $54 million worth of Jimmy Butler, and you'd have to find a team willing to take that on and give you 54 or so million dollars back of actual good player. I don't think that this is a contract that is tradable. And if you want to say that they fleeced the Heat, well, if he comes in and plays better than Wiggins did, then yeah, you could say that they fleeced him. If Jimmy Butler suddenly reverts to the Jimmy from a couple of years ago, then yeah, you could talk about them winning the deal. I don't know if anybody's going to be able to say they fleeced the other side.
Yeah, this one's tough. I mean, you're talking about the two main players in this deal. Both teams have been having shopping trade conversations for weeks and weeks, if not months.
Longer, yeah.
If not years,
yeah.
Quite frankly. So it's hard for me to wrap my head around that idea that anybody got fleeced here. Let's go to BPA. Hi, BPA. What you doing, man?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing pretty good.
Dibs, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great because you lost another one of your S-talking wagers to me because last I checked, dog, Kuminga is still a Warrior. So we'll go ahead and just accumulate all your L's into one big W for your boy the Dibber.
Oh, thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Happy Friday to you too, okay?
Good to talk to you.
So I would say I think it's a great move because, you know, I mean, they had Wiggins is what, probably a fourth option on a good team. And, you know, Jimmy Butler is a one or a two. And when you give Steph a one or a two, which he has not had since Durant was here, he's deadly. I don't know if you saw that picture last night of Steph driving through the lane with five Lakers guarding him before he passed it out to Pods after, and then Pods almost broke the backboard again. But yeah, to be able to punish defenses for double or tripling Steph is sort of mandatory, or there's really no consequence for doing it. And you have a number one or number two guy who is, you know, yeah, I mean, to compare him to Wiggins, I mean, he's far better than Wiggins. Wiggins is just, you know, Wiggins is a solid wing, but he's not a guy you can rely upon as a scorer. So, yeah, it's worth it. Yeah, they had to do something. So, anyways, that's my take. Dibs, okay. Have a great weekend, okay?
You too, Ben. And you're welcome, BPA, because of all the people in this market that I've made, add him to the list.
Wow.
BPA was nobody until I highlighted his his little tick that he does. And now he's like a local legend.
He's an acronym. Exactly. I mean, like, he's the only caller that's just like letters.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I mean, GPD, Grandpa Daddy.
That's true, but we don't. We usually call him Grandpa Daddy.
Yeah, nobody refers to Brian in Palo Alto. Now he's BPA. Getting run on the roast. You're welcome, BPA.
I found the SF Gate thing that about the whole the Warriors fleece the Heat thing.
Okay.
It's basically just pulling together Bill Simmons' comments.
Oh, boy.
Which, real quick, he thinks it's amazing short term and not amazing long term. not amazing long term. And no, he does not think that they're going to be able to trade Jimmy Butler in the offseason.
So you know what this piece is then, right?
I do. It's an aggregation sensation.
Look at you.
Yeah.
My God.
Cha-ching! Come on, man.
Ramona always worries about getting aggregated by us.
That's why she won't Ramona Shelburne. That's why she waited for the deadline to go. Keyword that you need to win a spot in the knockout tournament is immediately. Coming up next, we're also sponsored by MB Jesse Painting. Plenty of time for your calls throughout the remainder of the show. However, coming up next, we go live to New Orleans to talk to Greg Cosell, dive in on the Super Bowl. And in exactly 45 minutes, Monty Poole on the Warrior Beat is going to join us. This is Willard and Dibbs.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games. Or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Greg Cosell standing by, which is just awesomeness. However, something we got to do first. A little business
before Greg Cosell?
Absolutely, and it's important business because it's time to give out the keyword that you need to claim a spot in the knockout tournament, Chase Center Court. We know a lot of you have been trying hard. Keep trying, keep coming. We appreciate the heck out of you. Today's keyword is roll. Roll.
Can you spell that?
Like, you must be butter because you want to roll.
A tootsie roll.
Yeah, R-O-double-L.
Okay.
Double up, The keyword is roll. So sometime in the next 25 minutes, you will hear this sounder. When you hear that sounder again, that's your cue to call. Don't call now, you'll win nothing. But the contest line, have that ready, 415-523-4652. Don't call now, but again, the contest line is 415 523-4652, and the keyword is roll. So you've got those two things in the hip pocket and ready to go, because when you hear the sounder again, if you're the first caller to call in with the correct word, bang, you're in the knockout tournament, and we all get to play hoops together on the Chase Center floor on March 3rd. Okay? And Dibs is going to actually go this time.
Yeah.
Found out last night, lovely Christy's going too.
Okay.
I'm not even waiting for anybody to let me say it's okay. She talked to Director of Sports Lucas Alexander. Thumbs are up. And she used to be a point guard in high school, so she's coming for that.
All right.
She's coming for that crown.
Look forward to seeing the footwear she chooses. She's known for her 3-inch heels.
Should be interesting. Just like it is when we talk to Greg Cosell, who joins us right now on the River Islands guest line, the czar of NFL films, as it is Super Bowl week, a very, very big week. Good afternoon, Greg. How you doing?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Oh, we're fantastic. We got to admit, we've been like knee deep in the NBA trade deadline all week. So it's almost the Super Bowl is almost kind of sneaking up on us. But when you look at this matchup, just sort of the view from 10,000 feet, Greg, like what are some of the specific matchups that you think are kind of the linchpins to what's going to happen here?
Well, guys, you know the kind of work I do, so that's a hard question. There's probably 20 things I could talk about. You know, obviously, from a 30,000-foot point of view, what is Steve Spagnuolo going to do to stop Barkley? And, you know, because I go deep in the weeds, I think about it in terms of what is he going to do with his defensive fronts? Is he going to play a five-man front at times when they're normally a four-man D-line? How is he going to deploy his linebackers, Bolton and Tranquil? You know, is he going to run blitz on early downs? And will the Eagles, believe it or not, maybe be a little more aggressive in the pass game on early downs because they know they're going to get one-on-one matchups outside the numbers, and that's the strength of Hurts as a passer, throwing outside the numbers with Brown and Smith maybe versus McDuffie and Watson. So I think there's, you know, that element on that side of the ball is really fascinating to me because, you know, Spags is not just going to line up and play like it's a regular team.
Would that be almost a give-up by Philadelphia, Greg? A team that rushed it more times than any other team in the NFL feels like their best foot forward is the ground game. What do they do with the rushing attack that makes it so difficult to stop outside of, you know, how much of the read action they do with Jalen Hurts?
Well, there's a couple of factors there. First of all, the O-line is obviously phenomenal. It's the best run-blocking O-line in the league. It weighs more than 1,700 pounds, and they wear you out through the course of the game. But the other thing that's really interesting about their offense and their run game is it's really kind of layered. You know, everybody just thinks they hand it to Barkley, and he runs, and they got a good O-line, and boy, it's all good. But there's so many layers to their run game because you have Hurts predominantly in the gun, and when he's in the gun, you always have the zone read as an option, so you have to defend that. You have to allocate a defender to Hurts all the time when he's in the gun, and then there's other elements that they add. They add screen elements, so defenders react to that. So there's so many layered parts to just what ends up being basic runs. And the other thing that they've started to do exceptionally well is motion. And mostly we think of motion guys in the pass game, but motion's a really big deal in the run game too, because what that often does is it changes run support for the defense. So you're trying to minimize run support. You're trying to gain numbers in the run game. They did that beautifully, for instance, on Barkley's 65-yard touchdown run on the very first play against the Commanders when they used motion and then put the run numbers in their favor. They're really good with motion in the run game.
Greg, I'm glad you brought that up, that specific player, that specific thing. The run game for the Eagles is obviously such a strength, but so is what the Chiefs have done against the run game, both in the playoffs in the past and even this year. Like, they just usually do not give up a 100-yard rusher. When you look at the specifics of that matchup, do you see an edge somewhere?
I mean, I would still give the edge to the Eagles, but it's not a big edge in the sense that, you know, they're so much better. But the thing is, guys, and I know you watch the games, when you watch the Eagles play, it just seems inevitable that Barkley's going to break a long run somewhere along the line. So obviously the Chiefs really want to prevent that. We'll see how the game goes. You know, the great thing about a game like this is you can talk about what's happened up to this point, but there's always a few tweaks and wrinkles because teams have had 2 weeks to prepare that we just don't know about. But you know, the thing with Barkley is you can theoretically stop him. In other words, maybe he gains 2 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 2 yards, 1 yard, and then all of a sudden he breaks one off, and that's the killer. And the other thing to remember about the Eagles, the Chiefs are kind of like this too, but the Eagles are really probably the best purveyor of this in the league, is they are a four-down offense. So once they get to their own 40-yard line, okay, the minus 40-yard line, if it's fourth and 4-3, they're going for it. They are not punting. And that changes the way you have to play defense. Because if it's 3rd and 9 and you give up 7 yards and you think, hey, we get them off the field, you're not getting the Eagles off the field. They go for it. So that clearly changes how you have to play defense.
And is that something that Kansas City mirrors? And I can't help but think about Patrick Mahomes in this game and how clutch he's been, not only throughout this year, but is Kansas City a similar offense in terms of their willingness to go for it on fourth and medium?
Yes. Yes. My sense is, I could be wrong because I don't have numbers in front of me, but it seems to me the Eagles do it a little more, but the Chiefs absolutely do it. But one thing the Chiefs are exceptional at, and this is a critical down in this game on that side of the ball, is they are phenomenal on third down. They convert at a really high rate, over 50%, and they do it with a combination of scheme, tactics, and obviously personnel. And that's the challenge for the Eagles' defense, third down. And obviously third down is relative. 3rd and 3, you're thinking different defensively than 3rd and 9. But this is where the Chiefs are so good, and we all know that Mahomes does tend to run more in the playoffs, so that becomes a factor. So in a sense, if you're the Eagles, it's almost as if you have to have two defenses. You have to have your structure defense, in which you hope the play occurs, which, you know, is within 2.5 seconds. But then when you get beyond 2.5 seconds, where Mahomes is so special, it's almost as if you have to have a second defense, and that's what makes it difficult.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, at the Super Bowl with us here, Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Greg, for whatever reason, when these two have matched up in recent years, Devontae Smith has been wonderful. And I know he's a little dinged up with the hamstring. Yeah. But assuming he plays and he goes, is there something on film that you notice as to why he's able to get loose, or is it kind of circumstantial?
I think he becomes a factor. Look, obviously everybody remembers the Super Bowl 2 years ago, but these two teams played last year in Week 11, and that's when the Chiefs had LeJarius Sneed, and he matched up to A.J. Brown pretty much the whole game, and Brown only had one catch for 8 yards. Now, Sneed's not there, but McDuffie's still there, and Spagnuolo's going to play a lot of man coverage. That's what he does. He plays press man. That's his deal. So the question is, and we don't know the answer to this, but the question is, will he match McDuffie on Brown, or will he just play sides, and whoever ends up being over McDuffie is over McDuffie? We don't know the answer to that, but Smith is a really good receiver, and he kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit because Brown is probably a top five receiver in the league. But Devontae Smith could easily be a big factor in this game.
What about the battle of the tight ends? Because Travis Kelce gets all the headlines because of his excellent play and his quite famous girlfriend. But Dallas Goedert, quietly since getting healthy, has been very effective.
And Goddard is very much a function of the schematics of the Eagles, because the Eagles' passing game is not really that multidimensional, because that's where Hurts has some limitations. Hurts does not throw the ball in the middle of the field very often. I mean, think about this, guys. In the NFC Championship game, Jalen Hurts, I think, dropped back over 30 times. He did not throw one ball between the numbers in the entire game. Think about that. So Goddard, it becomes kind of more important within the schematics of what they do with the pass game, how they get him the ball with space and room to run, as opposed to hitting him, let's say, the way we normally think of tight ends in the middle of the field. Now, Kelce, it's been an odd year for him. It's been his worst year. He averaged 8.5 yards per reception. He had the fewest number of receptions that went for first downs than he's had in a long, long time, probably since close to his rookie season. So he's been a little bit of a different player in the context of their offense, but you obviously can't ignore him, and no one would be surprised, obviously, if he went 8 for 110 in this game. I mean, he's Kelce. So it's not as if the Eagles can ignore him, but the Eagles are a nickel defense. They play man and zone. It would not surprise me when they play man, particularly if the Chiefs have two tight ends on the field. It would not surprise me if Cooper DeJean is the matchup on Kelce.
Greg, I'm interested in this because, and you know, you talk about Kelce. I'm interested in the other Kelce because last year when the tush push really became a thing, a lot of people went, it's the personnel. It's what Jason Kelce is doing. But the tush push for the Eagles has worked again this year.
Yep.
Doesn't work for every team. And we saw Josh Allen not have great success with it against these Chiefs. So when they get to that play, do you think the Chiefs have some sort of an answer, or is it going to be same old, and why does it work for the Eagles and not seemingly everyone else?
Well, it pretty much worked for the Bills in every game they played until that game, so it does kind of work for everyone else too. So, but that's the game people remember because the Bills ran it a few times and it didn't work. But for the Eagles, they pretty much don't get stopped. I mean, my guess is that they'll still run it really well. So, you know, and by the way, that becomes a big factor because again, that's a fourth down play as well, and they convert on those. I mean, that's a meaningful part of their offense.
Looking at these two teams stylistically, if the Chiefs are going to win, is it more low scoring or is it the Eagles needing a high scoring game? Just looking at the film and the tempo and how these teams go about it, what do you see from a pace and tempo style which would favor either team?
Yeah, that's a great question because I think that, you know, it's a great question and a hard question to answer because here, let me answer it this way. The Chiefs actually have two really burner wideouts in Worthy and Brown, but yet they haven't really been an explosive offense. Now, Brown's only come back recently. So you can look at what they've done all year long, and they've not been an explosive passing game. They've really been a third down conversion offense. But we know Mahomes can make any throw. We know that Brown and Worthy can run. I believe that they are going to attempt some vertical throws in this game, particularly going against Darius Slay. Now, if they convert those, we could see some big plays. If not, then they'll be more of a sustaining offense. The Eagles, by their nature, are a sustaining offense, but because of Barkley, they can be an explosive offense as well. So it's hard to know. I mean, I think both teams are going to take some shots early in this game to see if they can hit big plays. And I think how that turns out will dictate a little bit about the pace and tempo of the game.
It's interesting, Greg, because we've heard you often this year. We talk about the Eagles, and you've had some real insight on Jalen Hurts and what's kind of, I guess, not working in the past game. But listening to you talk about this matchup, it sounds like you're expecting the Eagles to check in on that passing game maybe a little more than they have been in the past.
I would think they would check in early and see how it goes. Yes, I do, because they know that the Chiefs' focus will be on Barkley. And they also know that Spags, unlike some other teams, see, now it becomes opponent-based. Spags does play man coverage and press man on the outside. That's what he does. That's a foundation of his defense. So there are going to be opportunities one-on-one outside the numbers, and that's where Hurts throws the ball best. So I'm not suggesting he's going to drop back 50 times, guys. Don't get me wrong. I just think they are going to take some shots early and see how it goes.
When you look at some of the gadgetry and some of the trick stuff that has done, do you look at Kansas City and their use of Xavier Worthy and, you know, whether or not it's, you know, Patrick Mahomes being split wide? Does Kansas City have some wrinkles that you've seen on tape that might catch Philadelphia off guard?
Well, if there are wrinkles like that in this game, there won't be any that we've seen on tape. There'll be something brand new. And it's very likely that each team will have a couple in the bag, and they'll decide when, if and when they want to use them, depending on the flow of the game. But they won't be something that we've seen this year.
Greg, I'm interested, when I hear people break down this matchup, because the Chiefs are the Chiefs, I hear people a lot talking about the big game experience and the success that they've had. You're a film guy. And so I wonder, when you're breaking things down, how do you factor in something like experience?
I mean, I really can't, you know, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously we know that Mahomes is the kind of quarterback that no moment is too big for him. So we know that if it gets down, you know, I mean, obviously I'm sure you've heard a lot of people say this week in between discussing Jimmy Butler that you know, if Mahomes gets the ball and he's down by two with 2 minutes to go, that the Chiefs are going to win the game. You know, there's no way to quantify that. It just happens. Mahomes wins those games. He does not get stopped. So, you know, there's no way on film to, you know, get into some guy's head and understand what experience means. But it's obviously a team that's been in a lot of these situations. So it's not a new situation for them at all. And it all stems from the quarterback, who I'm sure is incredibly calm in the huddle, and he plays very calmly.
Greg, what a treat to have you all football season long. These conversations have been wonderful. I do wonder if you've done any film or at least audio breakdown of both me and Dibs this year, and what you would say about that.
Well, you know, guys, I hate to say this, but I really haven't. You know, now that the season is sort of winding down, I've already started and jumped in hard to watching college players. So that's my focus now, and that's a little bit of a different focus. But that's a total grind in a different kind of way.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. Who should the Niners take at 11, Greg?
I'm not there yet, and I don't necessarily think like that. I just love evaluating players. You know, like, I mean, I've done three quarterbacks already in hardcore detail. Those guys I'm done with, and I've seen, you know, some defensive players. You know, I just start grinding away watching guys. It's a different kind of experience.
Yeah.
So it really becomes fun.
Well, when you get to all the three techniques and the left and right guards and maybe the right tackles, we'll call you back and you can give us a detailed breakdown of the big guys that the Niners might want.
On Radio Row the last couple of days, Fred Warner was walking around a lot. I don't know him, so I didn't say hello. But, you know, those guys, the stars that walk around on Radio Row here, as you guys know, I'm sure, always have an entourage.
No doubt. No doubt.
And I don't have an entourage, and I always wonder about that. You know, I don't have that.
Greg, we can work on that for you.
We'll get you an entourage.
Get you a corporate sponsor, and, you know, puff your chest out, and let's do this next year.
I think you guys need to help me out there and get me an entourage and a corporate sponsor.
No problem.
And then I can walk around like I'm really important.
Goals, Greg. Yep. We're going to keep working on this, okay? have a great trip out there. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Love being with you. Thanks so much.
All right,
thanks,
Greg. There it is. Greg Cosell, NFL Films. Look at you sneaking the little buzzer beater there.
Yeah, you know.
He kicked your butt all year long.
Right.
And then he schmoozed your face right there on the way out the door.
Kind of like the whole Fade the Dibber bit where I went 2-10 in the playoffs and I'm going to emerge smelling like a rose with a Super Bowl cuckoo. The pick is in. Philly in the points.
You really think the Eagles are going to be Super Bowl champs?
I do, yeah. And honestly, when I watch the game, and you know, I'll watch it twice, once like a normal person and once like a wannabe Greg Cosell, but you're going to be able to know right away if Philadelphia has a chance. The first couple times they try to run the ball, if that vaunted O-line, Greg said it, 1,700 pounds of best in football, if they're unable to move Kansas City and create holes, then that game is over.
Mm.
I do think it comes down to that. If they can run it with Jalen and the zone pull and Saquon and all the rest of it, if they can really run the ball, they're going to win the game. That was a good take.
That is not Grandy saying that Dibs is amazeballs with his take. That is him saying it's time for you to win your way into the knockout tournament. So there it is right now. Call the contest line 415-523-4652. First person to call that line with the correct keyword is into the knockout tournament, Chase Center Court, Monday, March 3rd. Again, 415-523-4652. Call now with the keyword best of luck. And again, it's Friday afternoon, but this isn't it. We do it again 5 days in a row starting next week. So if you keep trying and you don't win today, keep on trying next week. 8 a.m., noon, 4 p.m. every day, 5 more days. So 15 more spots to give out after this one.
Or just fall in love with Mark and
yes, you can.
You know, be his fiancé, and apparently you get into.
That job is full.
Okay. You know.
Negative ghostwriter,
right.
The pattern is full.
Turns out that is a way to get in.
You can.
Yep.
You can. But I wouldn't recommend it. All right, we're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. We're also sponsored by Kalshi. We will tell you that in exactly 20 minutes, Monty Poole on the Warriors is going to be with us. But coming up next, let's play with this a little bit. 888-957-9570. Last year, the first week of February, was all the anticipation of the 49ers in the Super Bowl. This year, one of the craziest NBA trade deadlines we've ever seen, and the Warriors landed Jimmy Butler. Which one was more fun to you? Which one more memorable to you? We will take your calls on that right now. 888-957-9570. Which was more fun? Last year's first week of February or this year's first week of February? This is Willard and Dibbs.
See from a pace and tempo style which would favor either team?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think that, you know, it's a great question and a hard question to answer.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
My head almost exploded on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was you got the great question.
Yeah.
You get the double back to, like, confirm great question.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think that, you know, it's a great question and a hard question to answer.
Which, as you know, when he says it's a hard question to answer, is kind of Greg Cosell's way of punting, which means maybe not a great question.
Well,
because the point of a question is to get an answer. So
it was so great and so hard that he had to take a moment.
You stumped him.
Yeah, because it was really, and he answered it very well, I thought, after I was done celebrating.
I didn't listen to a word he said after that.
Yeah.
I fell over. I'm like, you can't, great question, then go, and then double back and be like, great question.
And hard.
But also, I don't even know what to say about it. Like, if you do, I didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah. I knew.
But congrats.
Yeah, thanks. I knew what to do, which was immediately start drinking in celebration, because, ladies and gentlemen, the weekend, when you get that on a Friday after 4 o'clock, it's time for the weekend. So.
You go drink?
Well, it depends. Yeah.
Of course you are.
Sunday I will. I think we're just going to watch the game at home. My son, Quest, might come over.
Oh, good.
With a friend of his, but it's going to be a home game. It's tough with the 2.5-year-old because her nap usually ends about 3. So that's about kick time. So
3:30.
Yeah, we're not just going to uproot the nap so that I can drive somewhere else and watch the game.
Oh, I will tell you, wherever y'all end up for the game, turn on 95.7 The Game when you're done and on your way home.
Are you working?
I'm working. We're doing the game. But, you know, my time slot is normally 5 to 8.
Right, right.
We move it back on Super Bowl Sunday.
Gotcha, okay. So you're doing 7 to 10?
I will do 8 to 11.
Oh, wow.
I will do 8 to 11, and somehow...
So on Monday, you're basically going to come in here useless. Exhausted.
Well, how's that different than any other
good
Monday?
Point.
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
All I know is every year on the Super Bowl, not that anybody cares about this, but it's a weird night around my house because... Since we have not yet got to the part, which is coming someday in the future, where Monday after the Super Bowl is a holiday, whether we push this into President's Weekend or whatever like we should, once it's a holiday, we'll be good. But we're not there yet, which means it's a school night, and Dad will be somewhere in the house screaming and yelling about Devontae Smith and that holding call that the refs missed
right
until 11 at night. And the 10-year-old needs to be asleep. He needs to be asleep by 9 o'clock.
That's tough.
It's tough. So, during commercial breaks, you know, rub his back a little bit. You know, it's all, and then go yell more about Patrick Mahomes and the damn refs.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And I hope it doesn't come to that. I know that there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and there's even some... spread some betting action on the refs, like how many penalties, and will there be a 15-yard penalty thrown against Philly on Mahomes?
I love that there's will there be an overturned touchdown? That's my favorite one.
Yeah.
Will there be an overturned touchdown? I don't believe in any of the conspiracy stuff. I just know what I see, and that is that the Chiefs got away with a bunch of crap this year.
Yeah, and he tends to get calls that other players don't get. I'll tell you this, that the number one most wagered upon prop in the Super Bowl
is
being wagered upon more than the actual game itself.
It's not the coin toss, is it?
No, it's the Saquon Barkley touchdown.
Oh, yes, you're right.
There's been more wagers on that than there are on Eagles or Chiefs.
I read from a casino boss that, first of all, they would love it if Saquon Barkley does not score a touchdown.
You think?
And they would still love it, but not as much, but they would still love it if he only scores one. If he gets to two or three, they start paying off some big odds, and apparently there are a lot of people calling for that. I tell you what, there might be value in, like, just chill on Saquon because he's phenomenal. I'm not saying the Chiefs are going to bottle him up, but if there's anybody who can, it's the Chiefs. They do not give up 100-yard rushers. They do not. Now, that doesn't really say anything about touchdowns, but I saw his over-under numbers like 110.5.
I see it at 109 and a hook.
That's a lot to expect from a guy going against the Chiefs who never allow that. Like, literally never allow that.
Right, and that's where I really do think that the first couple of plays for Philadelphia will tell me everything I need to know about the game, because if Saquon can't get much going on the ground, then Philadelphia's in trouble. And as Greg Cosell just told us, this Eagle offensive line, they're really good at wearing you down. So if he's successful early and successful in the middle, then by the third and fourth quarter, he's going to get to that 109.5.
Yeah, I it's going to be interesting. So I do want to, before Monty Poole joins here in about 7 minutes, I want to talk this out a little bit, but also let you all know about the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. If you've heard us talking about this recently, you know how big of a deal this is. Someone's going to win travel and accommodations for four. That is, you, the winner, plus three of your guests, go to Las Vegas and get $20,000. And yes, I said that fast, but we meant it. $20,000. You'll get airfare, you will get the hotel, and you get $20,000. You'll stay at Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas' premium sports viewing destination, and visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim, the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball championship. All you have to do to win is download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour, and you get a daily entry. That's it. Download, log in, listen. That's all. National contest, download the Odyssey app now. You might be headed to Vegas in March with $20,000. All right, so how would y'all answer that? Was last year more fun, the first week of February, leading up to the 49ers in the Super Bowl? Or did you have more fun this year, which was no 49ers at all, a Super Bowl we hate, but the wildest NBA trade deadline than any of us can remember, and the Warriors being involved in that at a high level by landing an all-star?
For me, it's last year, just because you're on the cusp of perhaps winning a Super Bowl, and all we've been doing is waiting for the Niners to end that drought, get to the Super Bowl and win it. It was a coin toss kind of a game. The Brock Purdy Cinderella story and everything that went around the excitement, the season that the Niners had, and you're going up against Patrick Mahomes again. Forget the way that it ended up, but the lead up to it, I thought, was so exciting. The anticipation of, you know, being the team that could actually do what now Philadelphia is trying to do.
It's an interesting word that you use, because I'd argue it's the word of the week both weeks.
Yeah.
Anticipation. Because there was a nervous anticipation with the 49ers in the Super Bowl and everything we were worried about. You know that whole, like, hey, 80% of what you worry about doesn't happen? Well, this was the 20%, because everything we were worried about happened. You lost to the Chiefs again. You came from ahead again. You sort of felt like you blew it again. All of that stuff happened. So that nervous anticipation, I don't know if the word I would use for it was fun. Like, Grandy, you even said you were like sick to your stomach all week, basically.
Oh, yeah, nervous wreck. There's 2 weeks between the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl.
Plus, that second week, which is the week we're talking about, for me is largely like, all right, already. Enough talk. Let's play the game.
You remember the story last year leading up to it was the Niners' bad practice field?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yes, and the Niners having to potentially change spots, and UNLV versus playing at the actual stadium, which is what the Chiefs got to do. Good point. Yeah, I remember that.
That's why Dre Greenlaw ruptured his Achilles. I mean, it certainly could have been a factor. They're playing on concrete, and the guy already had a bum Achilles on the other side. But thank you for the reminder, Granny. I had forgotten about
that
storyline. But, like, yes, there's anticipation around Jimmy Butler, but ultimately it's not going to culminate in a championship. Last year, you were one of two teams with a chance to win a title. So for me, the anticipation last year was much more immediate and much bigger. This year it's exciting, and I can't wait to watch him play against Chicago in his old stomping grounds and see Jimmy Butler out there rocking number 10 in the blue and the gold. And that's going to be fun, but ultimately, what's it leading to? Ooh, we're a 7 seed. Yay!
I don't know what it's going to lead to.
Right.
Like, you know me, we've sat here for 2 days talking this out. I might be as skeptical as anybody. Maybe not as tiny, but I'm as skeptical as anybody. But at the same time, I can admit we don't know. I don't know where this is going to go. Maybe it's going to go somewhere amazing. But I more mean the anticipation of, you knew the Warriors were going to do something. You knew. We sat there when we all met together like a week and a half ago, and we're like, clear the decks. The Warriors are making a big deal, and it's going to come down Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday of this week. And it did. It came down Wednesday at, what was it, about 5:11 in the afternoon.
Yep.
It came down. So we knew. So I think there was sort of some nervous or excited anticipation both weeks. You're right. One of them could have led to a championship. Didn't.
Yep.
This one is a little bit different. It's not that final, and it's not that directed and whatnot. But I don't know, man. As far as the fireworks of it, I would actually pick this year. Because, again, that second week leading to the Super Bowl gets a little tedious. Number one, I don't think the week itself is that fun. The game is fun, although it did not turn out to be all of that fun. This, dude, this just kept coming. This started over the weekend, and it was frenetic. It kept coming. You knew the Warriors were going to do something, but also Luka and AD and De'Aaron Fox and Zach LaVine, and we can keep on going down the list. I don't know, man. This ended up being one of the more memorable trade deadlines that's ever existed.
It was super fun, and I think it's more memorable because the Warriors actually got to be a part of it. If the Warriors hadn't made a deal, I don't know how much it would be one of the more memorable deadlines. Certainly, the Luka-Anthony Davis piece was one of the more stunning trades in sports history. And then the De'Aaron Fox was, we kind of saw that coming, but still, when it happened, and Zach LaVine on the move and all the rest of it, and then the Warriors landing Jimmy Butler is a massive move. And so, yeah, it kind of culminated a frenetic week, but for me, the run-up to the Super Bowl, even though we're not that into it here, if we were in another market, a market that doesn't have an NBA team and just has an NFL team, I do think we'd be a lot more interested in this game than we are here.
For sure, for sure. And I don't want to speak for other markets and everything, but multiple reasons, trade deadline being one of them, Chiefs fatigue being another one, us not really being big fans of the Eagles is yet another one. I cannot remember a quieter run-up to the Super Bowl, though, in my history in this business. Could you imagine if we had signed up 2 months ago to go to Radio Row?
I was thinking that earlier today.
And the Niners don't even make the playoffs, and then you end up with this disgusting matchup? We would have been out there at Radio Row in New Orleans. Everybody else is talking to Fred Warner, and we're like trying to get Brian Windhorst on the phone. Like, we haven't talked football the whole week.
Right, until literally today. Until we, you know, talked today, and we did Greg Cosell, and we did Fade the Dibber, and that's about the only time that we've talked about it. And normally we would do a lot more than that, no matter what the Super Bowl was, but it just so happened this year that it was the trade deadline week in the week run-up, and I wonder if the NBA did that on purpose, and if they didn't, if this was just a happy accident, well, then Adam Silver, go ahead and write it down, because it worked, my man. You stole the headlines from the NFL, so I know that the Super Bowl I don't think next year is going to be pushed back to President's Day. And I saw a report earlier this week that the NFLPA, they were asking its membership about an 18-game schedule, and the players have no interest in 18 games, of course.
Thanks, players, for your opinion. We'll take that into account.
Well, it has to be collectively bargained.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you want to wait until it's 2030, I think, when they crack it open again, and if that's really something that the owners want, then you're going to have to give something back because players don't want to play an additional game.
Yeah, of course. But again, like they do not have the power. Their union has got too many people in it, and they're gonna lose that fight. They'll take another preseason game away. There will be an 18-game schedule. Is it going to take 6 years? It might, but you could book it. I almost guarantee it. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco on Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.